We are joined today for some important announcements from the Fuels America Coalition by Bob Dineen, who is the president and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association, Tom Bias, who is the CEO of Growth Energy, and Brent Erickson, who is the executive vice president of the Biotechnology Industry Organization. We're going to share some brief comments from Tom and Bob and Brent, and then we'll move to your questions. Tom, do you want to kick things off?
Today, Fuels America Coalition, which is a broad-based coalition of renewable fuels producers and farm equipment and agriculture groups and chemical companies and others, is launching an aggressive new TV and digital advertising campaign, along with an oil site called oilrigged.com, to blow the whistle on all the ways that the oil industry is trying to rig the system in their favor in this debate. There's a very substantial ad buy, both on TV and online, though will stretch for at least the next 2 weeks on national cable. We're also launching an Earth Day takeover on politico.com today. As the EPA considers whether or not they're going to backtrack on the renewable fuel standard and hand a huge windfall to the world's wealthiest oil companies, it's important for us to remind everyone just how many ways the oil industry has rigged the system in their favor. They've rigged Washington. In fact, according to the Center for Responsive Politics, in the last 5 years, the oil and gas industry has spent $855 million on lobbyists and campaign contributions, which is more than $1 million for every member of the House and Senate. They've rigged the market by refusing to invest in the infrastructure to sell fuels like E15 or E85, and then demanding to waive the RFS because there isn't enough infrastructure. And they've rigged the tax code. The ethanol credit, the VTEC, expired more than 2 years ago, but now we're in year 101 of the oil company tax breaks. And they've rigged the debate, putting out an enormous amount of misinformation about renewable fuels to deliberately mislead people about the value of renewable fuels. And Bob Dineen with RFA can kind of expand on this last point, but let me just give you one example that really sticks in my craw. You know, I grew up as a farmer. I farmed full-time before coming to Washington. And oil companies like to say that ethanol is responsible for raising the price of food. Biggest lie I've ever heard in my 26 years here in Washington. Because actually, according to the World Bank, the number one culprit in rising food prices is the rising price of oil. We don't make this stuff out of sweet corn, canned corn, popcorn, or even candy corn. It's made out of number two yellow corn, which is an animal feed, and all the byproduct is a high-value livestock and poultry feed. With that, we certainly hope that EPA and Congress will get the message that the system is already rigged overwhelmingly in favor of the oil companies, and all we're asking for is a fair chance and market access, so consumers can make a choice. We certainly shouldn't be going out of our way to help them rig it even further. With that, I'd introduce Bob Dineen of RFA.
Thank you, Tom. You know, we really believe that oil rigged is an apt description of what the API is doing today. They are absolutely trying to rig the debate with misinformation, junk science, and misleading ads, all designed to scare consumers and Congress about ethanol, to protect their market share. They say, for example, as Tom indicated, that we're somehow increasing the price of food. Not true. They say, for example, that ethanol is bad for engines, and they've got ad campaigns out there saying that. They're referring to E15 without saying so, and they just sort of paint this broad brush about how ethanol is bad for engines, despite the fact that it has been used successfully for decades and is fully warrantied by vehicles. But they point to this one study, the CRC study, that they say demonstrates that E15 is going to wreak havoc with your engine, ignoring the 42 other studies that were done demonstrating that E15 is safe for 2001 and newer vehicles. They've got an ad campaign out there saying that E15 is bad for boats, ignoring the fact that, indeed, E10 is approved by all marine engines. Again, they're trying to rig the debate so that people focus on, well, E15 is bad for your boat engines. Well, E15 is not approved for marine engines. You know, Vernon Barfield, who is the vice president for the National Boat Racing Association and that association's technical chairman, has stated quite publicly that E10 is great for boat engines. It's better for the environment. And they've been running on E10 for more than 20 years without a single problem. There are no problems with E10 in boats, but you'd not understand that if you just got your information from API's misleading and rigged advertisement. One of the things that just drives me to absolute distraction is the current line that they have that, you know, we don't need renewables. We can frack our way to energy security. Well, I say frack that. There's no way on this earth that we'll ever be able to frack our way to energy security, and that's certainly not a way to lower the price of gasoline, because those fracking operations won't pencil out if the oil price were to fall. And it is a dangerous way for us to move forward, and most certainly not a reason to go backwards on our renewable fuel needs and programs. With respect to gasoline prices, they ignore and they want others to dismiss the fact that ethanol is the lowest cost liquid transportation fuel on the planet today. And when we talk about the fact that ethanol is reducing consumer prices, they again try to rig the debate by saying, oh, well, it's all about BTU, and ethanol has fewer BTUs than does a gallon of gasoline. Well, that's actually somewhat irrelevant. At a 10% blend level, EPA says there might be a 2% reduction in mileage, but the fact of the matter is we're 85 cents below the price of gasoline today, far more than that 2%. More than that, though, when compared with other octane enhancers, there is no BTU difference, and the price differential becomes even greater. You know, don't take the ethanol industry's word for the fact that ethanol is driving down the price of gasoline. None other than Phil Verliger, an oil industry analyst his entire career, has recently come out and said that ethanol added to gasoline has a tremendous benefit to consumers, reducing the price of gasoline by between 50 cents and $1.50 a gallon. That's their analyst saying that. But again, they're trying to rig the debate so that we don't focus on the real benefits of ethanol. And then, this being Earth Day, and Brent is going to expand a little bit more about some of the environmental impacts, but it galls me that API is out there with advertising right now saying that ethanol is somehow responsible for converting native lands equivalent to the Yellowstone and Yosemite and the Everglades into corn production. That's not true. And I think they live in a pretty large glass house, because what they want you to ignore is that the Deepwater Horizon spill alone covered the ocean surface the size of Oklahoma. The land area of current and future tar sands operations would cover the entire state of Florida. The current oil and gas leases on federal lands would cover the entire state of Georgia. They live in a huge glass house. And people need to understand that the environmental profile of ethanol is better than gasoline and getting better still, while their carbon footprint is getting worse with every well we drill in the Gulf of Mexico, with every tree that is coming down in Canada for tar sands, and with all the activity and fracking in North Dakota and elsewhere. Their carbon footprint is getting worse. Ours is better. Happy Earth Day. Brent, why don't you take on from there?
Well, thank you, Bob. You know, there's a reason that we chose Earth Day to launch this oil rig campaign, because the fact is that we're really talking about here is doing the right thing for the planet, which of course also happens to be the right thing for the U.S. economy and our health and our national security. President Obama has said that addressing climate change is one of the top three priorities of his presidency. And over the last 5 years, when we've been able to reverse a decades-long trend and actually reduce the amount of CO2 the United States emits, a reduction of about 36 million metric tons in 2013 compared to 2009 in the transportation sector. But everything in the United States is doing from a policy standpoint to reduce carbon pollution. The renewable fuel standard is making the biggest impact by far. And people often forget that the renewable fuel standard is an amendment to the Clean Air Act and that it's the only thing on the books that actually requires mandatory reductions in CO2. In the April edition of the Journal of Industrial Biotechnology, they published a new analysis that evaluates EPA's new proposed RFS-RVO rule in terms of greenhouse gas emissions. And the result is that if the EPA adopts its proposed rule to lower the renewable fuel content of U.S. gasoline, carbon emissions in 2014 will be 28.2 million metric tons higher than they would otherwise be. And that's kind of a striking thing coming from a White House that says climate change is one of its top three priorities. That amount of CO2 is equivalent to adding 5.9 million cars to the road or 7.5 new coal-fired power plants. It's worse than canceling every wind farm currently under construction in the United States, and it's 10 times worse than shutting off all the hydroelectric capacity of the Hoover Dam. So in other words, while U.S. carbon pollution has decreased under the Obama administration, this one proposal by itself by EPA would cause such a large increase in carbon pollution that it almost completely wipes out all the reductions in energy-related CO2 emissions in the United States has achieved since 2009. And it's just really hard to imagine why the White House and EPA would take a regulatory approach that would result in environmental backsliding. And we hope that this is something the administration will keep in mind on Earth Day. The oil companies do have the system rigged, but we can't afford to let them rig climate change as well. And it makes you wonder whether they want to make any progress on climate change. They've been opposed to it so far. The RFS seeks to create fairness in the marketplace and to improve our environment, and it's been working, and we can't afford to let it be undermined at this point. Thank you very much, and we'll go to questions.
Reminder for folks on the call that if you want to ask a question, just press *3, and we'll get you patched through, and we'll go ahead and take the first question from Jerry Perkins from the Biofuels Journal. Again, it's *3 to ask a question. So we've got John Siciliano from Inside EPA. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I was just, Charlie Drebna had a sit down with reporters, I think, last week, and he seemed a little concerned that Gina McCarthy is going around saying that she's going to change the numbers, maybe increase the conventional biofuel requirements, and he doesn't like that. And I was just wondering if you're getting assurances from EPA that, you know, when they put out a final rule, it's going to look a lot different than what they first proposed. And in addition, are you communicating anything today, especially to the White House, in terms of letters or meetings over the White House or over at EPA?
John, this is Bob. Look, we're certainly all continuing to communicate with the administration at every level that we possibly can. The EPA got more than 330,000 comments on this rule. Most of those were in opposition to what EPA was proposing. Despite all of the best efforts of the oil companies to generate comments through their robocalls and whatnot. So I think Charlie, poor guy, is probably frustrated that they weren't able to buy more commons than they did. But EPA is going to have to evaluate the substantive commons, and I think based on what I've seen of what was filed, I think they will most definitely have to change the rule and increase the number. You know, DOE has indicated that gasoline demand is going to be stronger than they had projected when EPA proposed the rule last October. So for that reason alone, I think they're going to have to increase the number. I find it somewhat sad and ironic that Charlie last fall saying you got to reduce the number consistent with gasoline demand. But, you know, now that gasoline demand is stronger, he doesn't want to move the number, and he's still upset. That, to me, reinforces that really all this is about is market share. All it's about is trying to make sure that Charlie's member companies gets to sell more oil to consumers. That's not what the RFS was about.
Are you communicating anything specifically today to the White House? Is this going to go? I mean, I realize you're launching an ad campaign, but is there you know what Brent was talking about in terms of, you know, they're making climate change a priority. Gina's going all around the country talking about the climate action plan, but at the same time they're proposing reductions in biofuels. Is that going to be communicated in any way today or next week to the White House?
John, again, this is Bob. I don't know if Brent wants to pick up on this as well, but, you know, look, most certainly that has been one of our consistent themes throughout all of this, is that if the president is serious about addressing climate change, don't roll back the only program out there that is assuring carbon benefit from transportation fuels.
Yeah, this is Brent. Right, you know, we did submit the study to EPA and our comments to the rule, so they do have the information. We've circulated around that to the administration quite well.
All right, very good. We will go to Jim Votavalli from the New York Times. Go ahead, Jim.
I would just ask quickly whether, if you look at it, you seem to be seeing the gasoline and oil lobby as a big enemy here, but do you see that maybe electric drive might take some market share away from ethanol as a transportation fuel?
Yeah, I think they are. If it takes any away market share, it'd be from oil, not from biofuels.
Well, it's the same thing. I mean, if part of your sales is putting ethanol into gasoline, isn't it the same thing?
I guess, Jim, we absolutely want to see electric other alternatives succeed. We have absolutely no quarrel with any other alternatives to petroleum. And they're not, you know, the electric vehicle industry is not trying to eliminate the RFS. The oil companies are. What this is all about is reducing our dependency on oil, particularly imported oil. You know, they're the target because they are trying to rig the system to eliminate a program, the Renewable Fuel Standard, that has been an unmitigated success any way you want to look at it, from consumer cost benefit to energy security to the environment to rural economic development. The RFS has been a success. The only ones that don't like it are, you know, is the incumbent industry that is absolutely trying to undermine support for biofuels or any other threat to its market share, I would suggest, including electric.
All right. Could I just quickly ask, when are we going to see cellulosic ethanol commercialized? There's been a lot of talk about that, and it seems to be forever a tomorrow fuel.
Yeah, this is Brent Erickson. It's actually being commercialized as we speak. INEOS down in Vero Beach, Florida, has generated RINs Abengoa has a facility that they're building in Hewkinton, Kansas. They have over 1,000 workers on the ground as we speak, building a very large cellulosic plant. CSM, Poet, DuPont all have cellulosic plants under construction this year, and they'll be coming online this year or early next. So it's happening now, and that's a really key point why it's so important to maintain the RFS at the levels that we had before, because these things are being commercialized at the very moment that people are talking about rolling back the RFS, which would undermine the commercialization of cellulosic fuels. We can't afford to strangle the baby in the cradle. These things are happening now, and we can't send a bad market signal by rolling back these volumes too much.
All right, very good. A reminder to press *3 to ask a question. We do have a couple more minutes for questions. Next, we'll go to Cesar from Reuters. Go ahead.
Yes, I thank you so much for your time this morning. I just wanted to ask two questions, one sort of looking backward and one sort of more forward-looking. First, just looking back, just looking at the website you guys have put together, Oil Rig, you know, there's just a lot of information there and facts and numbers kind of countering a lot of the things that we've been hearing from the oil industry. It kind of made me wonder why, you know, you guys didn't sort of put this together earlier. I'm wondering, what have you learned sort of over the last year as this, you know, battle over the RFS has unfolded? Is there any sort of takeaways from the last year in terms of what you've seen from the oil industry that you're now sort of taking into account as you're making your case on this issue?
This is Tom Bias. I think we've learned they will stop at nothing to try to get rid of the RFS. This is a fight about market share. They know that. One of their big fears is that we will succeed with the next generation of production of from different feedstocks the way we have with the first generation. So it's about market share. We've seen lies. We've seen misinformation. In fact, I was just saw one of their banner ads today that is really misleading. It shows a young girl eating a piece of sweet corn, and it says it should be going to people, not machines. Well, this is pure lies and misinformation. So that's why I think you're seeing all of us push back again. Should we have done it earlier? Always. But we're here, we're now, we're not going to put up with this misinformation. If they want to have a debate about the facts, fine. Let's debate the facts, not the fiction.
And then just looking ahead, how do you see this playing out?
Well, this is Bob. I think EPA has certainly indicated that they hope to have a final rule out sometime in June before the end of spring. I have every confidence that they'll be able to do that. I am certainly hopeful that they will read the comments that they received, and they will adjust the rule to reflect what Congress intended with the RFS, and not allow the concerns of the oil companies about, oh, we just can't blend anymore, to dictate how they move forward with this program. The RFS was intended to force marketplace change. It was intended to drive innovation in ethanol production, which it is absolutely doing. As Brent indicated earlier, there is indeed commercial size cellulosic ethanol and other advanced biofuels that is happening today, but it has also got to drive marketplace change so that you can have higher blends of ethanol, E15, E85, be available to consumers. That requires the oil companies to do something they do not want to do. And EPA can't take away the tool of the RINs to allow them to rig the system and get out of maximizing the production and use of renewable fuels, not imposing an arbitrary cap on it. I suspect, as we've indicated earlier, that EPA is going to make significant adjustments to this program, but we're going to keep the heat on.
right, very good. We've got time for one more question. We'll go to Rachel from Opus. Go ahead, Rachel.
Thank you very much. This sort of piggybacks on what Bob just mentioned. At a biofuels conference yesterday, some biofuel representatives said they expect EPA to raise the 2014 final RFS RVO. Do each of the panel members agree? And what do you expect the when do you expect the final rule to come out?
Tom, do you want to jump in? Or go ahead.
Well, Tom, why don't you start it if you wanted to, all of us. I think you'll hear the same thing from all of us, Rachel. But, Tom, why don't you start?
Sure. Well, number one, EPA should revise the rule. We think they're wrong from the very start. They went backwards, not forwards. It's short-sighted. The documentation for doing so was flawed. We all think that if they pursue the right course, they will change the rule. As far as when it comes, no one knows for sure. All we can rest our hat on is the fact that Gina McCarthy and other EPA officials have all been saying this spring, and spring goes till June 21st. Bob?
And is it... Sorry, is it still the feeling of the industry that if the numbers are not raised or not raised to the level that they should be, that the biofuel industry will still consider litigation?
Rachel, first of all, let me give you a great quote that that you will enjoy. It's short and sweet. I agree with Tom. Now, as for potential litigation, let's not put the cart before the horse. It's not all about the number. There's lots of concern about what authority EPA ultimately relies upon to make any kind of a waiver. We'll all have to evaluate that when we see what EPA ultimately does. It will be important to each of us that they not introduce into a waiver that was fundamentally about supply, that they not introduced demand components to that. If they do that, if the supply waiver becomes a demand waiver, they will have turned the act on its head, and that'll be problematic. Brent?
I agree with everything you both just said.
Thank you.
All right, we will leave it there. Thanks, everyone. The website, oilrig.com, is up. You'll also find on that website, if you click in the news section, the video of the TV advertisement. You should also have in your inbox from the beginning of this call, you should have the press release. If you have not received that for some reason, let us know. You can contact Aaron Wells, who will hook you up with that or answer any follow-up questions that you may have or direct you in the right direction. Aaron's email address was on the original press advisory, but again, it is Aaron, A-A-R-O-N, at smoottews.com, S-M-O-O-T-T-E-W-E-S.com. And with that, we will wrap up, and thanks, everyone. Have a good day. Happy Earth Day.